This is IRIB English Radio.
Iran's foreign minister says Israel's presence in the Persian Gulf poses a threat to all regional countries, stressing the need for efforts to curb further crisis in the region. Israeli Minister of Military Affairs is in Bahrain 2 years after Manama normalized ties with Tel Aviv through a U.S. brokered deal. And Russian President Vladimir Putin says that NATO has ignored all of Russia's concerns with respect to eastward expansion of the military alliance. Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to World News. Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, has warned his Emirati counterpart presence of Israel in the region poses a threat to all regional countries. In a phone call, Amir Abdollahian told Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed that more efforts are needed to curb sources that will create crises in the region. Referring to the Yemeni war, Iran's top diplomat said the continuation of the conflict is not in the interest of either side involved. For his part, bin Zayed said that Abu Dhabi strives to encourage all Yemeni parties to find a UN-backed political solution to the conflict. Phone call comes after a recent visit by the Israeli president to the UAE. Iran is commemorating the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Palestinians in the occupied West Bank say since the 1979 revolution, Iran's unconditional support for Palestinians and the resistance against Israel has not wavered. Mona Candil reports out of Ramallah.
While Iran is marking the anniversary of its 1979 revolution, which overthrew a U.S.-backed regime, Palestinians in the occupied West Bank hail it as the most successful revolution in the contemporary era. I met the former speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Dr. Hassan Khreshi. He praised the Iranian revolution as a source of inspiration in the region and beyond.
Iran's Islamic revolution has formed a historical turnout in the life of people in the region. This revolution came to stand in the face of oppression. For the Palestinian people, it was a victory. We saw how the Iranian people took over the American embassy and turned the Israeli embassy into the Palestinian embassy. We witnessed how Iran welcomed late Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat when he visited Tehran after the revolution, and how the Islamic Republic embraced him. The most important achievement of this revolution is declaring the International Quds Day. We cannot deny the support Iran has offered to the Palestinian resistance groups.
After the 1979 revolution, Iran started supporting the Palestinians. It all began after Iranians took over the Israeli embassy in Tehran and handed it over to the Palestine Liberation Organization. As part of its effort to inspire the oppressed people, Iran aided emerging Palestinian resistance groups, notably the movements of Islamic Jihad and Hamas. Both the Palestinian factions sent their representatives to Tehran, while Iran's support for both groups continue until today.
Iranian revolution is one of the main revolutions in the last century. And this, on the one hand, it is against the counter-revolution, it is against imperialism, and as long as it is against imperialism, it is for sure against Zionism, against the Zionist Ashkenazi regime. That's why this is very great help for the Palestinians. And as far as the role of Iran in the resistance, bloc, it is very important to mention that as long as you are fighting, you are resisting, then you are progressing. That's why the role of the Iranian revolution in this bloc is a first and very important role.
Iran's Islamic revolution was led by Imam Khomeini. The revolution was driven by anti-imperialist sentiments. To Palestinians, the revolution anniversary is reminiscent of their struggle for independence and resistance against the Israeli atrocities. Iran's Islamic revolution is viewed today as a potent, unstoppable force in the region and beyond. An example in this regard is the heroic struggles of the Palestinian people against Israel when a Qandil occupied Ramallah.
The Israeli Minister of Military Affairs is in Bahrain, the latest high-profile visit to the Persian Gulf Arab country since Menachem normalized ties with Tel Aviv. During the two-day visit, Benny Gantz will hold talks with high-ranking officials and sign a security cooperation agreement with Bahrain. Visit comes nearly 2 years after the tiny kingdom forged diplomatic ties with Israel in a U.S. brokered agreement known as the Abraham Accord. Last year, Israeli Foreign Minister Yair Lapid traveled to Bahrain, where he inaugurated an embassy. Israel and Bahrain are taking part in U.S.-led naval exercises currently underway in areas including the Arabian Gulf and the Red Sea. Iran has put on trial the ringleader of a terrorist group. Evidence presented during the court session suggests the group has received support from Saudi Arabia and Israel. Habib Shab is accused of several bombings and terrorist operations in Iran's southwestern Khuzestan province. Shab led the so-called Arab Struggle Movement for the Liberation of Ahvaz. During the session, it was revealed members of the group visited Saudi Arabia annually. They received instructions from Saudi intelligence officers to carry out acts of terror inside of Iran. One of the members also met with the Saudi king. Documents further show that Shab himself had dealings with former Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi says Washington's policy of maximum pressure has failed to achieve its goals.
When the Americans openly acknowledge that they have failed in their maximum pressure policy, an ignominious failure, this is a victory for the Iranian nation.
Raisi said Iran's policy of maximum resistance has offset the U.S. pressure. Raisi made the remarks during a visit to a mausoleum of late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, on the occasion of the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. Back in 2018, former President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew the U.S. from the 2015 deal between Iran and world powers and intensified a campaign of sanctions to force Tehran to negotiate a new agreement. The Russian president says NATO is unwilling to address his country's main security concerns as Moscow and the West remain locked in a standoff over Ukraine. Vladimir Putin told the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson that Russia is firmly opposed to Ukraine becoming a member of the Western alliance. Two leaders have agreed escalation over Ukraine is in no one's interest. They've also stressed the need to work toward a peaceful resolution of the crisis. On Tuesday, Johnson visited Kiev, where he said the presence of Russian troops near the border with Ukraine poses a threat to the country. The U.S. Defense Department says it'll deploy around 3,000 more troops to Eastern Europe amid mounting tensions between the West and Russia over Ukraine. Pentagon spokesperson John Kirby says a new deployment includes 2,000 troops, which will be headed to Europe in the coming days, plus 1,000 soldiers who are currently based in Germany will be moved to Romania, a southern neighbor of Ukraine. Troops are in addition to around 8,500 American soldiers put on alert near the Ukrainian border. That's while Washington has accused Moscow of fabricating context of invasion on Ukraine, citing deployment of Russian troops for its claim. However, Russia denies the accusation, saying that it's piled troops along its own soil purely for defensive purposes in the face of NATO's eastward expansion. We spoke to political analyst William Jones to get his thoughts on a recent escalation of tensions between the West and Russia over Ukraine. Here he is.
There is no indication that Russia plans to invade Ukraine. The moves that they are taking on their border is on the border of a country which is in the state of a veritable civil war. And the reason they put the troops on the border is really to send a signal about not only about Ukraine, but also about the dangerous direction in which all of the agreements that have been made between Russia and the West since the fall of the Soviet Union are being violated effectively by the United States in this expansion of NATO right up to the border of Russia. Well, obviously, the United States, the West generally, the United States is more interested in creating their own control over all of the parts of Europe that are not Russia. So that the goal here, although it's talked about in terms of the defense of Ukraine and victimization of Ukraine, is really an attempt to create a cordon around Russia, which they consider a not only a rival and a competitor, but also a potential enemy. And by doing so, they hope that they can keep Russia in a boxed in effectively, so that no moves are made one way or the other, which would endanger the hegemony of the so-called U.S. rules of the road.
Russia has vowed to retaliate Germany's decision to shut down a German language service of Russian broadcaster RT. Russian Foreign Ministry has slammed the media ban as unacceptable and politically motivated. It says Russia will take reciprocal measures against German media outlets and internet platforms that have deleted RTDE accounts. Germany says a Moscow-based TV channel lacks a valid German license. Russia denies this, saying that RTDE has been operating under a European convention to which Germany is party. Moscow says it will challenge this decision in court. And pressure continues to build on Britain's prime minister in a leadership challenge. Now a senior conservative lawmaker is joining the chorus of critics, saying that he'll submit a letter of no confidence in Boris Johnson.
But it's not the previous battles that matter. It's the domestic and international ones ahead of us that count. And the question now is for all of us, is the prime minister the best person to lead the party moving forward?
Tobias Elwood says a Partygate scandal is distracting the government at a time of international crisis. He urged Johnson to call for a vote of confidence rather than wait for MPs to trigger the process. Elwood also admitted the Conservative Party is slipping into a very ugly place. British Prime Minister is under fire after the release of a partial version of an internal inquiry. The report has described a series of lockdown breaching parties held at Johnson's residence and government offices as a serious failure. Johnson could be removed as Tory leader if 54 of the 360 Conservative MPs submit letters of no confidence to the party.
At 11:30 a.m. Monday, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson received an important email. In the attachment, a damning report into alleged parties under his roof last year. Among other things, a 13-page report by senior civil servant Sue Gray looked at 16 gatherings during the pandemic and found that the behavior was difficult to justify, with failures of leadership and judgment, and too little thought was given to what was happening across the country.
The complete version of the Sue Gray report is yet to be published, pending a police investigation. But the sheer scale of potential breaches meant that Boris Johnson had to face furious MPs in penitent mode again.
I want to apologize. I know that millions of people across this country have made extraordinary sacrifices over the last 18 months.
To the opposition, sorry was not enough.
The British public aren't fools. They never believed a word of it. They think the Prime Minister should do the decent thing and resign. Of course he won't, because he is a man without shame.
He has been investigated by the police. He misled the House. He must now resign.
Members of the Prime Minister's own party didn't pull any punches either.
Either my right honourable friend had not read the rules, or didn't understand what they meant, and others around him, or they didn't think the rules applied to number 10. Which was it?
And while the Prime Minister and the people around him were allegedly having a good time away from prying eyes, the rest of the people adhered to the rules. Those who didn't were stopped unceremoniously.
what it would take for this Prime Minister to go. I don't know. If this doesn't get in his way, then God help us all, frankly, in terms of politics in this country.
People are sceptical, and I think a lot of people also kind of think with the police, you know, quite rightly, obviously, number 10, there's a police presence. So people in the police were aware that, or should have been aware that, you know, something was going on in the back garden.
While people were dying and while people were unable to attend funerals, for him to be holding parties and agreeing to parties to be held when he made the rules is fairly immoral.
The public mood here is one of outrage at the moment, but experts say what Boris Johnson desperately needs now is not public support, but the backing of his own party members to avoid a leadership challenge. Saeed Purizep, London.
Cost of living in the 19-country Eurozone has hit an all-time high as inflation rises to more than 5%. Now EU lawmakers are demanding emergency measures to prevent even more citizens from falling into poverty. Jerome Hughes has your details out of Brussels.
Food and energy prices are soaring across the 19-nation Eurozone, placing enormous pressures on cash-strapped consumers. Inflation hit a record high of 5.1% in January. The matter was debated in the European Parliament on Wednesday.
I'm highly concerned about the combination of high and increasing levels of inflation and a central bank that refuses to normalize its monetary policy.
The story is not the same everywhere. For example, Belgium has an inflation rate of 8%. In France, it's just 2.5%.
Hence, we will see divergence in international competitiveness of the member states of the euro area. We've seen in the past the misery that comes about when you have that kind of development.
The economic impact of COVID-19 has disproportionately hit young adults in the EU. Homelessness and mental health problems are rife. For example, here in Belgium, PreventSuicide.be published a report on Tuesday showing calls to its helpline have skyrocketed. A record 22,000 were made last year, an increase of 20% on the previous year. The vast majority of those desperately reaching out for support are young people. Due to growing public debt, EU governments have been cutting investment in crucial areas such as education.
That cannot be the right way forward. We are increasingly in a knowledge economy in Europe. We need to invest in our people to really be competitive.
The potential fallout from a conflict between Western-backed Ukraine and Russia is fueling economic uncertainty in the EU.
This is something we have to factor into our economic analysis. And geopolitical tensions and issues, of course, have to be recognised.
Some EU lawmakers say the West should stop provoking Russia and instead put the best interests of citizens first. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
خاکتو قرمز و سبز و سپید نمنم من نمن منم من ذره خاک وطنم من ذره خاک وطنم من ایران خاک دلیران ایران کنام شیران ایران همیشه جاویدان.
This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
in the limelight.
The Islamic Revolution, which continues its inspirational awakening of the masses in the region and beyond, is an undeniable fact, as is evident by the positive developments in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Bahrain, Yemen, Afghanistan, Egypt, and Nigeria, to name a few countries. The astounding progress of Islamic Iran in science and technology, that is, medicine, stem cell therapy, the nuclear fuel cycle, aerospace, cyberspace, and artificial intelligence, and all other fields, including profound influence on social, cultural, intellectual, political, and economic events outside the borders of Iran, is proof of the far-sighted vision of Imam Khomeini. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan International staff writer. This article is published under the heading, A Revolution Was Burst of Light. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. February 1st starts the 43rd 10-day dawn in the history of Iran. It means it is now as many years since that memorable day when that sage of the age landed in Tehran to an unprecedented welcome seen anywhere in the world to guide people towards victory of the Islamic Revolution and establishment of the Islamic Republic. Millions of Iranians thronged Mehrabad Airport this day in 1979 to catch a glimpse of the return from almost 15 years of exile of the iconoclast at whose impending arrival the British installed and U.S.-backed Shah had fled the country. No doubt, the enthusiastic masses in Iran sang in the streets, via the radio and on the TV. The devil has fled at the approach of the angel. As the international media focused upon the charismatic personality of Sayyid Ruhollah Mousavi Khomeini, God bless his soul, expecting some sort of sensation, especially when the apparatus of the Pahlavi regime was apparently intact and thundering threats, the unguarded imam and his millions of unarmed followers neither dug trenches nor went for weapon arsenals. Straightway, he drove to the Behesht-e-Zahra cemetery, which was blooming with more and more new graves every day as the regime continued its killing spree on the orders of its masters in the U.S. He chose the resting place of the seemingly dead to address the apparently alive all over the world where consciences had long frozen, if not become lifeless. Every word he spoke has been diligently recorded and is punctually heard and is screened every year and does not need to be repeated, including his emphasis on establishing the Islamic Republic system of government, his naming of the U.S., the Great Satan, and his promise of support to the oppressed people of Palestine. It is worth recalling that many of the self-acclaimed analysts and politicians around the world had chuckled at the words of the black turbaned and white-bearded religious scholar in his late 70s. They didn't give him much chance of survival, let alone success. They thought he was daydreaming. Most in the West were convinced that soon he would be taken care of by the Shah's U.S.-trained military or pushed into the sidelines by Western-educated and supposedly democratic-minded self-styled revolutionaries who were now pouring into Tehran from Paris, London, Bonn, New York, etc., to take over the country as one of those puppet republics. How utterly wrong they were. The analysts, the politicians, the experts, the Iran watchers, including of the so-called Third World, who saw developments in the world only through the stained glasses of either the capitalist in Washington or the communist in Moscow. No need to recount the spectacular developments of the past 43 years in Islamic Iran, which Imam Khomeini guided through the intensity of the devilish plots of the great Satan, including the eight-year war imposed through Saddam of the repressive Ba'ath minority regime of Baghdad. In retrospect, where are today's politicians, analysts, and experts in the West engrossed in the 4+1 talks in Vienna and the useless U.S. sanctions? Like it not, it is crystal clear that the Islamic Republic of Iran is the epitome of practical reality of a sovereign, independent country that has defeated global arrogance. Similarly, the Islamic Revolution, which continues its inspirational awakening of the masses in the region and beyond, is an undeniable fact, as is evident by the positive developments in Iraq, Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Bahrain, Yemen, Afghanistan, Egypt, and Nigeria, to name a few countries. The astounding progress of Islamic Iran in science and technology, that is medicine, stem cell therapy, the nuclear fuel cycle, aerospace, cyberspace, and artificial intelligence, and all other fields, including profound influence on social, cultural, intellectual, political, and economic events outside the borders of Iran, is proof of the far-sighted vision of Imam Khomeini. He predicted the end of communism, and it is no more. He foretold the collapse of capitalism, and it is on its last legs in the West. He prophesied the weeding out of the cancer's tumor called Israel, and its death throes are evident for all, despite the desperate bid of the U.S. to prolong its survival through the much-publicized open alliances with the equally precarious Arab regimes. Thus, in a last-ditch effort that speaks of sheer frustration and intellectual bankruptcy of the U.S., its devilish minions, after their utter failure in turning Syria and Iraq into Takfiristan through the most macabrely murderous terrorists, have resorted to state terrorism in Yemen in a hopeless bid to try to undermine the wave of awakening set in motion by the Islamic Revolution. Soon, this will also end in failure. And, as stressed by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, who continues to ably guide Iran, inshallah, God willing, the current second 40-year phase of the Islamic Revolution will see more victories, watered by the sacred blood of the martyrs General Qasem Soleimani and Dr. Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, as well as those in Mesopotamia, Levant, the Arabian Peninsula, the Caucasus, Central Asia, the subcontinent, Africa, and other places, as the world eagerly awaits the promised new order of the global government of justice to be established by the savior of mankind, the awaited Imam Mahdi. May God hasten his reappearance. Didn't the late Imam Khomeini say, "Our revolution was a burst of light"?
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Hello, dear listeners, my brothers and sisters from every single corner in the world, wherever you are. I hope everything is fine and you're doing well. This is IRB English Radio, and I am Asma. I have the privilege to be your host. Today I'm at your service, and I'm going to share some priceless moments with you. Here with us, we have a very dear guest, Miss Ahmadi, and I would be very happy if she introduces herself to us.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salamu alaikum to you and to dear listeners and followers of this noble program.
Yes.
I'm Sayyida Fatima Ahmadi, the lecturer of the university, and my studies is around the social studies and women's studies. I'm here at your service, and we will talking about the importance role of the women in development of a country.
Yes, that's very true. Welcome to your program. We're here with Muslim Lady. Okay, before we proceed, I would like to join everyone in celebrating the Revolution Day, which is just around the corner. May Allah grant our country the blessings of peace and stability and preserve our unity and its strength. So, happy Revolution Day to all the Iranian out there. And just for those who have no idea about Iranian Revolution, I would tell you just the very gist of the story. About 43 years ago, on February 1979, Iranian people put an end to the monarchic system, and a new era of Islamic Republic has started in the history of Iranian nation. From that day on, every year we celebrate all the labors our heroes undertook to bring us honor and independence. So that's the whole story. Now, speaking of revolution, in this program, which is generally concerned with Muslim Lady and her issues, reminds us of great women in history. Now, we have heard a lot about mothers, sisters, and wives. I mean, women in different roles who shouldered such burdens during the revolution and afterwards during the war. They actually acted like real heroes. Shall we just talk about the role of women before and after the revolution?
First, I have to thank you because of this beautiful and brief introduction of the story of the revolution of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Of course, today we are going to talk about the development and the role of the women in development of the countries, and especially our own country, Iran. You know, before that, let's start to talk about the issue of the importance of research about the historical role of women in the economy. Because women make up half of the population, they can play an important role in the country's economy. It can be boldly said that without women's participation in the economy, development and construction are not possible. Especially since women entered the field of economic activities earlier than men. And in early societies, women have a more prominent role in the economy.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
sure.
Very funny.
From the very, very far history, we see that women's role even was more prominent than men.
So they were the pioneers
in
economy.
Yeah. Sure.
Let's go for a little break and then we'll be back. Thank you for listening to us and giving your ears and attention. We'll be back. Don't go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So you're listening to IRB English Radio, and this is Muslim Lady. We're talking about the role of women in history and in society, the burdens they shoulder throughout the history.
You know, in developing countries, most women work in agriculture and related industries, in addition to domestic work and work about 16 to 17 hours a day and are directly involved in wealth creation. You know, in other words, we can say that raising children by women is a kind of creating work wealth.
So they have double of job to
do. Exactly. Exactly. Therefore, considering this important issue, it is very appropriate to conduct studies in this regard and to take basic steps for the growth and promotion of women and the elimination of their problems.
So we talked about the role of women in economy. This might come to our mind that is it possible to ignore the role and work of women in a society? Now, there comes a question that tells, what elements are important in each country's socioeconomic growth?
Well, you know, although a country's potential for socioeconomic growth and development depends to a large extent on natural resources such as soil, water, mines, and raw materials, and the amount of investment, most development economists believe that what really characterizes and flows socioeconomic development is the human resources of that country, not its capital and natural resources. You know, the capital and natural resources of the country are subordinate factors of production, while human beings are the factors that exploit capital and natural resources, build socio-economic organizations, and regulate development. The importance of the role of women is clarified here. A very big question about this role is
the role of women in economy.
Exactly, exactly. Here we can say that the role of the women are clarified here because, you know, as half of human resources who are women, and women are not only the subject and goal of any kind of development, but also the agent of advancing its important goals. They also, in terms of achieving goals, more equitable distribution of incomes and increasing the well-being and standard of living of families, will have positive effect. Of course, without achieving the necessary skills, knowledge and technologies and their optimal use, economic progress and development is not possible.
So we can see that the role of woman is such an idealistic and very much big of a role she has in society and in economic growth. As we talked about the role of women in economy and in society, and we talked that she is undertaking so much of roles and so much of responsibilities, we could ask that, what is the role of women in socioeconomic situation of our country, Iran? Many things has changed before the revolution until now. We see a big difference in women before the revolution and then after the revolution.
Yeah. You know, it's nice to say that, you know, from the very beginning, the women had role in the development of the country from the very beginning, even before the revolution.
Exactly.
But, you know, this role became so much effective after the revolution because of the most and effective attention that the government put on women.
And they have more freedom to act.
Exactly. Yes. And, you know, the way was clarified because now they know their exact role in the family and in the society.
Yes.
Therefore, they could interfere in both parts. And, you know, the leaders of this government ask them that, please stay and take care of your role in the family because the children that you're raising and the husband that you're taking care of are the most important part of the society.
Yes.
But you can have some role and take part in the society in a very beautifully under a very special Islamic rules. They could have these two roles together and more effective after the revolution.
They can do both simultaneously.
Yeah, exactly.
Millions of Iranians across the country have begun 10 days of celebrations marking the anniversary of the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution that put an end to the monarchy of the Pahlavi regime in Iran. You are listening to IRIB English Radio and the dialogue between Sister Asma and Sister Ahmadi on the status of women in the revolution.
generally, I can say that, you know, our country is considered as one of the developing countries, yes, where about the 50% of the population is women. And women's activities are not hidden from anyone, either in household chores or in office jobs. But due to the lack of awareness and knowledge in this field, women's work is not given enough value. You know, I think that in all societies, it is the same.
Yes.
And it doesn't depend on revolution before or after. Always, you know, a very small, you know, lack of awareness towards the women's, you know, role causes this kind of, you know, lack of value of the women's work.
Yes.
And especially in productive and economic work. Women's work is ignored, of course. With further studies and reflection, we will find that women alongside men have historically contributed directly in wage work outside the home,
mm-hmm,
or indirectly in non-wage work at home to family income and national income.
Yes, that's very true. And we see a lot of women that they are the only responsible person in a family. So she's a mother and she has to be a father. She has to do everything at the very same time. And they're doing that in a very amazing way.
Yeah, so true.
According to what you said and based on what we see in society, we could claim, and it would not be wrong to say that, the role of woman, a Muslim woman, in her family and in her society is no way to be ignored.
Yeah, it is noticing. I really like to add this, that ignoring the work and economic activity of women is removing half of the active population in the economy from the field of work. And it shows that achieving construction and economic prosperity is not possible without women.
Exactly.
Due to being in the period after the victory of the Islamic Revolution and the end of the imposed war, as well as the country being in the process of construction and economic prosperity, conditions must be provided so that all people, no difference, men, women, can play their critical role in achieving goals. Therefore, one of the most important issues is to give importance to women in order to find their true place in the political, economic, and social activities of society based on Islam, of course,
yes,
and the Quran.
And we give them some insurance for their future, because
yeah, sure,
this woman is going to get old,
mm-hmm,
one day after all.
Yeah, sure.
So she has to be sure of her future.
Yeah, sure. And Islam in this field can be very helpful and useful. It shows the way to the women.
Yes.
That as I told you, you know, when you move under the light of Islam, it gives you some guidance that it is ignorable. We cannot ignore it. Non-ignorable,
true.
Yeah. And, yeah, true, what you say is correct.
Time flies so fast, and we do not have further more of time. Therefore, I would like to thank you for listening to us. I hope you enjoyed this program. Thank you very much. Take care until another session. May Allah protect you.
Who is the Lover?
Allah.
Who is Ar-Rahman?
Allah.
Who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah. Muhammad Rasulullah. Muhammad is the messenger. Allah is our return.
The Quran, given by God to Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, more than 1400 years ago, as guidance for humanity.
La ilaha illallah.
Muhammad Rasulullah.
Quran speaks about women.
The Quran teaches the equality of men and women in the eyes of Allah.
Chapter 33, verse 35.
All praise is due to the one and only. He is the master of all creation.
Modesty and chastity are encouraged by the Quran, both for women and for men.
Chapter 24, verses 30 and 31.
He is the sustainer and the maintainer of the whole universe.
God created us from one male and one female and made us into nations and tribes so that we make to know one another, not to despise each other.
Chapter 49, verse 13.
La ilaha illallah, Muhammadur Rasulullah.
The Quran has indicated worthy women in history just as it has mentioned such men and has commended them greatly.
Chapter 3, verse 37.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Recently, the New York Times reported the swift and severe response that the U.S. officials have warned in the event of Russia's alleged invasion of Ukraine could roil major economies, particularly those in Europe, and even threaten the stability of the global financial system. I prepared for you an article written jointly by Michael Crawley and Edward Wong. Under the heading, report says U.S. sanctions on Russia over Ukraine to impact global economies. Report warns the sanctions that the Americans are mulling against Russia over the Ukraine crisis could lead to high inflation and other forms of economic recession that would affect not only Russia but the entire global financial system. Citing analysts, the New York Times reported on Sunday, 30th of January, the swift and severe response that the U.S. officials have warned in the event of Russia's purported invasion of Ukraine could roil major economies, particularly those in Europe, and even threaten the stability of the global financial system. The New York Times report noted the concerns come amid relentless threats by Washington to unleash searing economic measures against Moscow, including sanctions on its largest banks and financial institutions, in ways that would inevitably affect daily life in Russia. It further underlined, some analysts also warn of a potential escalatory spiral. Russia might retaliate against an economic gut punch by cutting off natural gas shipments to Europe or by mounting cyber attacks against American and European infrastructure. Citing former State Department official Samuel Charap, who is now an analyst with a major U.S. government contractor and think tank, the RAND Corporation, the New York Times claimed Moscow could conduct new cyber attacks against the United States and American financial giants. Samuel Charap said, "We go after their big banks. They would likely go after ours." The U.S. Department of Homeland Security issued a bulletin recently warning of alleged Russian cyber retaliation. Many experts believe that the boldest sanctions against Russia's financial industry, if enacted, could take a meaningful toll. In a sign of growing seriousness, the New York Times adds, officials from the National Security Council have been talking with executives from some of Wall Street's largest banks, including Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, JP Morgan Chase, and Bank of America, about the stability of the global financial system in the wake of potential sanctions. The European Central Bank has also warned bank lenders to Russia about risk if the United States imposes sanctions and has asked about the volumes of their loans. For now, according to the report, American officials are not considering any immediate sanctions on the foundation of Russia's economy, oil and gas exports. European nations rely on natural gas from Russia, and several U.S. allies, notably Germany, prefer that Washington refrain from disrupting the Russian energy industry. The New York Times further cites analysts as saying that sanctions that limit Russia's ability to export oil and gas would be by far a weapon against the Russian economy and perhaps a so-called effective economic deterrent against an invasion of Ukraine, adding that they would also cause pain in Europe and in the United States. As per the newspaper report, U.S. officials are sensitive to the notion that they could be viewed as punishing the Russian people, a perception that might fuel anti-Americanism and Vladimir Putin's narrative that his country is being persecuted by the West. The report noted, from Cuba to North Korea to Syria, U.S. sanctions have a mixed record at best of forcing a change in behavior, emphasizing that while the Joe Biden administration and its European allies are attempting to deter Vladimir Putin with tough talk, some experts question whether they would follow through on the most drastic economic measures if Russian troops invaded Ukraine, as U.S. claims. The New York Times also points out that the American officials claim that they are trying to devise a sanctions response that would deal a damaging blow to Russia while limiting the economic shockwaves around the world, including in the United States itself. Officials said that for now, the Biden administration does not plan to target Russia's enormous oil and gas export industry, as doing so could drive up gasoline prices for Americans already grappling with inflation and create a schism with European allies. Russia has persistently rejected recent U.S. publicity campaign accusing it of pursuing plans to invade neighboring Ukraine. Meanwhile, the United Kingdom said on Monday, 31st of January, it was also prepared to punish Russia and Russian elites close to Vladimir Putin with asset freezes and travel bans if Russia sends in troops into Ukraine. According to the Reuters news agency, Britain urged Vladimir Putin to step back from the brink after accusing Russia of build-up of troops near Ukraine and warned any incursion would trigger sanctions against companies and people close to the Kremlin. British Foreign Secretary Liz Truss claimed planned legislation will give London new powers to target companies linked to the Russian state. Meanwhile, Meanwhile, a Russian government spokesperson, Dmitry Peskov, described the British threat as very disturbing, adding it would hurt British companies. Dmitry Peskov said an attack by a given country on Russian business implies retaliatory measures, and these measures will be formulated based on our interests if necessary. A senior Biden administration official said the sanctions will be imposed under an executive order that Joe Biden signed in April. The official claimed many of these individuals are particularly vulnerable targets because of their deepened financial ties with the West, adding sanctions would cut them off from the international financial system and ensure that they and their family members will no longer be able to enjoy the perks of parking their money in the West and attending elite Western universities. On Sunday, the leaders of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee said they were close to approving the most unprecedented severe sanctions against Russia to stop the so-called invasion of Ukraine. Senator Bob Menendez, the committee's Democratic chairman, said that in the event of such an alleged offensive, the lawmakers would want Russia to face the mother of all sanctions. Bob Menendez claimed Putin will not stop if he believes the West will not respond. Citing the American senator, the Associated Press reported the sanctions include actions against Russia's biggest banks that could severely undermine the Russian economy and increase lethal aid to Ukraine's military. Lambasting the United Kingdom's threat as an undisguised attack on Russian business, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said, "This is a very worrying statement from London, not only for our companies. This demonstrates a fair amount of unpredictability on the part of London and is a cause for serious concern for international financial structures." Relations between Ukraine and Russia have been deteriorating since 2014. When the then Ukrainian territory of Crimea voted in a referendum to fall under Russian sovereignty. The United States and the European Union backed Kiev, refusing to recognize the referendum results and later imposing sanctions on Moscow. Ukraine, as well as the European Union and the United States, also claimed that Russia has had a hand in an ongoing conflict that erupted in the Donbas region of Ukraine between government forces and ethnic Russians in 2014. The West imposed sanctions on Russia after accusing it of interfering in the conflict. Moscow denies the allegation.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.